Africa is for Africans. Asia is for Asians. White countries are for everybody. This is a violation of the United Nations Convention Against Genocide.
An unrelenting stream of immigration. Non-stop.
Europe is not going to be the monolithic societies that they once were in the last century.
The fact of the matter is, the UK is never going to be white again.
The biggest genocide in human history.
Us, but they can't refute us. It's the Fight White Genocide Podcast with Laura, Ken, and Jeff.
Welcome to the Fight White Genocide Podcast with Laura, Ken, and Jeff, where we talk about whatever we think is important in the global struggle against white genocide. This is podcast number 12, recorded June 4th, 2019. Today's topic is news and views. How you doing, Laura?
I'm doing good. Jeff, how you guys doing?
I'm doing good. How are you doing, Ken?
I'm doing well. Thanks.
All right, today we're going to do more of a conventional thing where we just go through news stories and comment on them.
Yep.
Okay, Barack Obama. In a speech in Sao Paulo, Brazil, on Wednesday, which would have been May 29th, confuses the Declaration of Independence with the Constitution. And he was president of the United States for 8 years, and isn't he supposedly a lawyer?
That's what happens when you go off teleprompter.
Right, yeah, so anybody that says, maybe he did it on purpose, but I think he just doesn't know. And yeah, anybody that doesn't know that, it probably doesn't have a whole lot of power, right? You know, so any time you complain about Obama, you're wasting your time. The guy has no power. He reads a teleprompter. He plays golf. He eats cheeseburgers. That's all he did when he was president. So, you know, don't worry about Barack Obama.
Doing what he's told.
Yeah. But this is a common misperception, of course. The Declaration of Independence, as Bob pointed out, was a war document written when we were desperate for support from silly European intellectuals that actually believed this sort of thing. When we won the war and wrote our own constitution, it had nothing like all men are created equal. It had ourselves and our posterity. That the only purpose of the country and the constitution was to create a more perfect union, bestow the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity.
Yep.
And Barack Obama apparently doesn't know that. And a lot of other people don't know it either.
Yeah. So, and just to clarify that, Obama thought that the phrase, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. He believed that that was in the Constitution. It was not. It was actually in the Declaration of Independence.
Yeah, you know, Brazil just thinks the United States was founded on inequality, and we have to admit that even though the United States has a constitution that says we hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal, well, the Constitution doesn't say that at all.
Right.
Nor does it say we hold these truths to be self-evident that access to white people is a human right.
Yep.
Doesn't say anything, which is what his translation of that phrase in the Declaration believes that it means that everybody has access to white people or should have access to white people.
Yeah, they don't care about equality because they don't want white people to have equal rights to homelands and self-determination that every other race enjoys. So they think equality is Asia for Asians, Africa for Africans, white countries for everybody. That's their notion of equality. It's non-whites belongs to non-whites. What's whites belongs to non-whites. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, it's the same with the Statue of Liberty as well. You know, that they were giving away something that wasn't theirs. You know, Emma Lazarus was giving away something that wasn't theirs. That wasn't what America was intended to be. It was never intended to be a multiracial melting pot.
Yeah, the poem on the Statue of Liberty goes against the preamble of the Constitution. Totally, mm-hmm. It's a total retraction of the preamble.
What the founding fathers were setting forth, You know, yeah, it is. It's unfortunate that they didn't put in their white men, you know, that they didn't add that in there. I get, you know, that they didn't think or see that that it was going to be an issue.
Yeah, they didn't predict Clown World. They never thought that people would be that crazy.
Bizarro.
You're right, the bizarro Clown World.
Yeah.
They just never predicted that. They never thought. But, you know, they did put it in the founding immigration and naturalization document that free whites only.
Right. So
we do know that they intended America to be a country of whites. And not only because of the immigration and naturalization document, but the fact that they gave us free speech.
Right.
The
simple fact that they gave us free speech means that they wanted us to be a nation based upon a people and not a monolithic idea.
Idea, right.
Yeah, because you can't, if it's based on a proposition or any set of words or any idea, they can't allow you to seriously question that idea. That would be treason. So you can't have free speech.
That's it.
Free speech and a proposition nation are incompatible. Free speech is only compatible with a nation based on a people. Mm-hmm. That's why, you know, that's why they're censoring us. That's why they're deplatforming us.
Right.
Where just every time they do that, they prove our point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and I guess what we're trying to say, what we're seeing here with this, you know, with and we see it a lot, right, where they're trying to rewrite history or trying to make it as if it was always the case. You know, it has always been this way that that America is a multiracial melting pot propositional nation, you know, and that's why, I mean, Bob said freedom, use it or lose it. We have to use the freedom that we have here with the freedom of speech to make it known what it really is.
Now, and Annie White could say that this all changed in the Civil War. And okay, fine. But what we're saying is we used our points against the people who invoke the founding fathers and say that this was a melting pot from the beginning. This is a diverse nation from the beginning. This is a nation for everybody that believed in liberty right from the beginning. Those are the people we're attacking. They're wrong. They're lying.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay, that's the point of bringing this up, to discredit the people, you know, who say America was always a melting pot for everybody who believed in liberty. Okay, well, when I first saw this, I thought, well, it's the first good thing I've seen Trump do.
It's not the first. There are a couple others. There's not many, but this is a good one.
He did try to implement the Muslim ban.
Yeah.
President Trump has announced the intent to levy a 5% tariff on all imports from Mexico effective June 10th. The president states he will remove the tariffs when Mexico substantially stops the illegal inflow of aliens coming through its territory. Okay, so Trump thinks he's found a way to avoid having to cage little girls, which is probably a smart move on his part, but it also shows if white people weren't demoralized, he wouldn't have to do that. He would just defend the border like every other country defends their border. Something similar happened with Gaddafi. He said, if you take me out, you know, I'm the cork in the bottle here that's preventing this flood of Africans from going north. So then, of course, the European Union, instead of saying, thank you, Gaddafi, they said, oh, gee, I didn't think of that. So they took him out. And so now they're getting the flood because they want the flood. But it makes it easier for the politicians and leaders of white countries politically to have somebody else control their borders. Yeah. But if we weren't demoralized, you wouldn't need that. And, you know, we'll see if he actually implements this, and we'll see if, a judge doesn't strike it down, too. But like I said, first good thing I've seen him do.
Yeah, it's a clever way to address the issue. So it's something I would have never thought of, but we'll see if it works.
Yeah.
Apparently, I mean, I'm seeing articles now and news stories that the Mexican president is trying to come to some kind of deal with Trump over this, to where he can remove the tariff we'll see if it works. We'll see how it pans out. You know, a lot of things that Trump has tried to implement have not panned out as he had hoped. So, well, as you brought up about the tariffs with Mexico, is that if whites weren't demoralized, we wouldn't need those tariffs. He wouldn't have to do that. And in my estimation, that's kind of the same with the wall.
Yeah.
If whites weren't demoralized, we wouldn't even need a wall.
Yeah, that's just another way to not have to deal with the actual problem. Yeah, you know, to actually deport people. You know, you don't actually have to grab people and deport them if the wall's there.
Yeah. And I've never really been a huge fan of the wall, to be honest, personally. I like the conversation it was bringing up. The idea of the wall, we wouldn't even need it if whites weren't demoralized. We could, you know, handle our immigration the same way the non-white world does. And yeah. There would be no need for a wall.
And the same way we handled it for hundreds of years, couple hundred years.
It worked. Yeah, we handled it just fine for over 200 years without a wall. It's only been a total breakdown in the last 50 years where we have had very little, if any, border enforcement. So it's just a matter of we've got laws on the books already. If we enforce these laws, laws like harboring illegals.
Hiring illegals. Trump has enforced that law at all?
Right.
That was part of the Reagan compromise when he gave amnesty to millions of illegals. Part of the compromise was they wrote into law the federal government can prosecute employers that employ illegals. I mean, law's there on the books.
Here's something I just thought of, and I've never thought about it before, but people that rent to illegals.
Yeah.
Does this fall under harboring? I think it should. Yeah, so... my estimation, the wall, I'm not against it so much, but it's not a big deal to me. As long as we were able to enforce the laws that are already on the books, we wouldn't need a wall. We wouldn't have to do this. The wall is almost, in my estimation, kind of taking away from the real conversation. It's, you know, it's a more of a misdirection.
Way to avoid...
Want to talk about misdirection? How about the fact of how well they've drummed up abortion topic again?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Holy cow! Like, I mean, I cannot believe how much and how successful, how fast that they have been able to drum up so much momentum into this whole abortion discussion debate. Like, I mean, it's such a losing debate, but it's what they know that they can get unite all the leftists on. Like,
actually, I've been pretty impressed with most pro whites on this subject. I can show you something here.
I think all I see is that it's like that they went and put all these bills in place and getting them, pushing them through, so that they drum up so much discussion and you know, anger from both sides on it, that all the attention just goes to that. Like, I mean, nothing else. Nobody will talk about anything else because this is like becomes the sole issue. Like, they've done such a brilliant job at using the media to set, you know, front and center it.
Like, and the way that the conservatives discuss it about black babies being aborted.
Oh, yeah. It's got to be at the top of our list of things to worry about.
Yeah, we have to worry about black white unemployment, black unemployment, Hispanic unemployment, and black and Hispanic abortions. These are just, you know, these are the way that the conservatives frame this conversation, and it's staying out of the abortion fight.
Yeah.
I haven't read this, but... anybody that's pro-white should be able to kind of see through the BS here as far as the whole abortion
discussion
here.
Yeah.
The discussion.
I think most pro-whites are pretty much agree with us that it's not a big issue. My attitude is, whether I'm for abortion or against abortion depends on the abortion. I'm pro-white.
Right, that's what Bob said.
Yeah, Bob said if a white girl was raped by a black guy, he'd perform the abortion himself.
Yeah, my thinking is, you know, I tend to be on more on the pro-life side, but this is a discussion to be had at a different time. Once white genocide is addressed and being dealt with, maybe the abortion topic can come into play. Yeah. There's so many issues here that people are discussing now that really, you know, I would support them in their endeavor in once clown world is ended.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Once the whole clown policies of open borders and all that and forced assimilation, once all that is over with, then these topics can be at the forefront. We can start talking about these things. But right now, there is a priority, and the priority is to end white genocide, and then we can move on to these other issues.
Well, I'm glad to hear that others.
Identitarians are best served by not having a set position in this debate. Yep, I agree. I was actually pretty heartened by the response from most pro-whites.
I would agree with that. Yeah.
It's
a non-issue. I mean,
it is, and I think that's their aim. You know, their aim is to use this. It is a topic that everyone has an opinion on. So if we can make that the conversation and make it front and center and continue it daily and have everyone talking about that, and then they're not thinking about anything else. And that's exactly why we need to stay away from it and realize that that's what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Here's what I wrote. Whether I'm for or against abortion depends on the abortion. I'm pro-white. Abortion is the perfect loser's issue. It sucks away all kinds of time, money, and effort that could be used to save white people. When white people have homelands and self-determination, then we can worry about abortion. Today, anti-white leftists would be perfectly happy to dump all their women's rights rhetoric and turn the low responsibility non-whites they have flooded into every white country into fast breed bioweapons of white genocide. And I would also add to that, if we look at Roe versus Wade, abortion was imposed on all the state by judicial fiat right at a time when a demographic bulge of white women was reaching peak fertility. So that calls into question whether it was a genocidal policy to begin with. And now, of course, now the world, they flooded all these non-whites. Now they're talking about getting rid of it. They don't care. See, women's rights takes a backseat to hurting white people. Once again, In the pecking order of political correctness, anti-whiteism comes first.
Yep. Always.
Always bring it back to race. I'm pro-white, whether I'm for or against a war. Okay? I'm not for pro-war or any war. Depends on the war. I'm pro-white. Yeah. The last war that America participated in that benefited the average white American was the Mexican War. Every war since then has been bad for white Americans.
Yeah.
In the case of America, they've already brought in like 100 million third worlders. I mean, once you look at not just like how many are crossing the border, but how many they have produced out, you know, the people that came in here 50 years ago and having kids, we're talking 100 million in America alone that came here through immigration somehow. So the immigration debate's kind of too late. It's basically we need to be talking about assimilation,
right?
About giving whites their human rights to self-determination and allowing whites to have their own territory, because you know, Europe, they could probably still have a bit of a conversation on immigration. But in the case of America, it's you know, that boat has sailed. So I mean, we're right. on to assimilation.
Yeah.
You know, Australia, I think has had been able to escape the immigration to some extent until the last 20 years, where they've kind of amped it up. So indeed, they can still talk. They could still talk about the immigration portion of it. If we could get Breitbart and all these other places to discuss assimilation the same way that they're discussing immigration, we'd be in a very good point, in a very good position right now.
Yeah, exactly. Yep, that would be.
Ann Coulter used to be a Trump fan. She even wrote a book, In Trump We Trust, E Pluribus Awesome. But since Trump hasn't done a damn thing, anything he promised to white people, he's kept all his promises to Israel, of course, but he hasn't kept any of the promises to the white people that voted for him, and has kind of soured on him. So when you lose an Ann Coulter, that's a problem.
Yeah.
Right? Here's a tweet that Ann had that I liked. We have a Coast Guard. How about a Land Guard? We could call it the Army.
I love that tweet. It's one of my favorite tweets from her.
Yeah. It's where the only country in the whole world, in the whole history of the world, whose army can guard everyone's borders but their own.
That's the truth.
Yeah.
It's that's an obvious truth. I mean, that's kind of a Bob quote right there. It's an obvious truth that most people never really thought of. We think, oh, well, the army is to go to Afghanistan and Iraq. No, that wasn't the purpose of the army. The purpose of the army was to defend our borders, to defend American people within America. That is the purpose of the army. And we've lost total idea of the meaning of our army and what they're for. We just think that they're like an invading force into foreign nations when
social,
it's not.
Yeah, it's a social program here, and it's world police everywhere else. So now Trump has fought back. Ann Coulter, President Donald Trump on Saturday referred to prominent conservative author Ann Coulter as a wacky nut job following months of criticism she has directed him regarding the lack of progress building a U.S.-Mexico border wall. Well, I mean, she's just saying you're not doing what you promised you're going to do. Mm. Donald, why aren't you doing it? So my point is, if you're losing an Ann Coulter, who do you got left?
Yeah.
Mm.
He's alienating all his supporters.
Yeah. Well, He's hoping to bring him back once the election, 2020 election, starts rolling out. He'll bring him back with just more talk. That's what he's kind of thinking he's going to do.
I wonder if this Mexico tariff thing is just a way to try to bring him back. Because they seem to be real forgiving. You know, anytime Trump throws them a little bone, they jump back on the Trump train.
The state of the economy, I'm sure he'll be banking on that will, you know, get him reelected, which I'm sure in a lot of senses it will. You know,
And black unemployment.
Yeah.
Yeah, all the for 70 years, Republicans have been saying going after the black vote. And every time they try to go after the black vote, they lose. Whenever they go after the white vote, they win. But they keep trying to go after the black vote. See, I'm not racist. We're not racist. They don't do a damn thing. Why would any white person vote for Trump, really? Why? What have they done for white people?
Yeah.
Okay, all the Hispanics and blacks can vote for him, yeah. But they're not going to.
No, they're not.
In any significant numbers.
You have all these Democrat politicians right now talking about reparations. If reparations becomes part of the 2020 presidential campaign, Trump can forget about the black vote. Don't even bother.
A brown skin or a black skin is a Democrat vote. That's the way they play it.
Mm-hmm. And they're right. They're generally right about that. But I do think that there has been a kind of resurgence, though, of black Americans towards Trump. But again, if the topic becomes reparations, Trump can forget about it. He can forget the black vote. Don't even attempt it.
Twitter researching how to deal with white supremacists on the platform. In other words, how do they censor any pro-white speech? Not pro-black speech, not pro-Japanese speech, not pro-Muslim speech, not pro-mestizo speech, just pro-white. white speech. Why not? Why aren't they going after Japanese supremacism? Why aren't they going after black supremacism or black, you know, nationalism?
Well, I mean, the entire non-white world practices ethno-nationalism in some sense. I mean, so they can't go after any other kind of nationalists other than white nationalists, because, you know, white countries are the only countries that are told that we have to have multiracialism and that we have to drown ourselves out. And if we don't, then we're white supremacists. We're the only ones that are targeted for this campaign. So if they just banned ethno-nationalists, they would be banning the vast majority of their users. Same with Facebook. They can't talk about banning ethno-nationalism.
Yeah.
They'd have to ban all of China. They'd have to ban Japan and South Korea and Taiwan. They'd have to ban the vast majority of their users. So yeah. This is an attack specifically against white people.
Yeah.
Obviously. That's why the term white is there. They, I mean, they are just going after white nationalists and quote-unquote white supremacists. And again, they're not going after the white supremacists that we were talking about in our last podcast. Those white supremacists are fine. They would encourage that.
If they banned everybody that thought whites were morally superior, they'd have to ban every anti-white and every leftist, They'd have to ban John Fugelsang. He thinks...
He'd be gone quick.
Officials at Twitter are reportedly conducting in-house research on white nationalists using its platform in order to determine whether or not to ban them entirely. Vice News reported on Wednesday that external experts, the same external experts that inform Facebook, I assume, are working with the company to help Twitter decide whether to ban users who express racist views from the platform entirely or instead combat hateful speech with opposing views. Well, the problem with opposing views is they don't work. You know, we're right, they're wrong, pretty much. So try, I guess.
Combating speech with opposing views works, but not when you're just dead wrong like they are. Like, we are combating hateful anti-white speech with an opposing view. Mm-hmm. And we are having an enormous success at de-radicalizing anti-whites. And that is really what they're afraid of. You know, they're always talking about how we're radicalizing people. Actually, no, we've de-radicalized anti-whites on a massive scale by putting out our talking points and our memes. We are de-radicalizing anti-whites. And this is really what they're afraid of.
Yeah, nothing more radical than pushing the genocide of an entire race of many hundreds of millions of people.
Well, I think, don't you guys find this pretty interesting? Like, this is really interesting. The site's head of trust and safety, legal and public policy, told Vice that the company is examining whether presenting counter speech was more effective as a tool of de-radicalization than simply removing offending users. Well, isn't that exactly what the guy, the congressman in his speech was saying? He was stating that. He was saying that, we can't ban speech. We've got to have, the opposing views to show, let people make their minds up for themselves. You know, once you go into censorship. And I mean, pretty much, I mean, that's the first time. This is the first time I've ever heard this, guys. This is amazing that they're actually talking about trying to use counter speech and conversation a force for good, and they can act as a basis for de-radicalization. And we've seen that happen on other platforms anecdotally. Well, I mean, that like everything that we've talked about, you can't do that. They're not going to be allowed to do that because everything that we say is true.
Yeah.
So,
again, she's absolutely right that counter speech and conversation are a force for good and it can act as a basis for de-radicalization. I agree with that entirely. Exactly. That is exactly what we are doing.
It's exactly
what we are de-radicalizing anti-whites.
And then people like
they can't have counter speech and conversation because we are de-radicalizing anti-whites and they're not doing anything other than proving our points. That's all they do. No matter what they choose, if they choose to engage us with conversation, they're going to prove us right. If they choose to censor us, they're going to prove us right. no matter what move they make, they lose.
They're helping and reinforce our position. But isn't it then also interesting that they're getting exposed to these truths? Like, wasn't there also some story about the people at Facebook and Twitter that have to censor posts, or people report posts to them, that they read all these posts and like they're getting, you know, red pilled or whatever that is. Is that the right one? Is it red pill? Mm. Yeah. You know, that they're seeing all these truths and they're not, you know, they're being told that they're meant to be censoring them, but it's like, well, hang on a second, this makes sense, you know. So how is this isn't going to, I mean, this is awesome for us because this is exactly what we want. We want to have a conversation, as, you know, de-radicalization, but it's not going to have the desired result for them.
Yeah.
But this talk from them might be just CYA stuff where they say, well, at the end of the day, they'll decide, well, no.
Yeah.
No, we're not going to let them talk because pro-white speech is uniquely inciting of violence.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they'll come up with some excuse, the excuse is, you know, everyone will say, well, did you even consider discrediting them and proving them wrong? And they say, well, yeah, we considered it. Of course, mm-hmm. we considered it, but at the end of the day, we decided, no, pro-white speech is internally hateful and violent.
Yeah, that's basically how it's going to work. They have considered countering us, but they can't, because if they debate us and they have a conversation, we're going to have valid points and they are not. So their only option is to censor and then slander. Mm. And yeah, they're going to censor us and then say, oh, it's hate and they're promoting violence. That's basically what it's going to come.
Maybe they're being honest, or maybe they're just trying to maintain their own credibility here by talking this way.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah. Seemingly that they're being balanced. But, you know, what's interesting, though, you know, we talk about the inciting hate and violence. Well, I think that, you know, pro-white speech, but it's what we're seeing also with Dirk Moses, the last point before silence ensued, because he could no longer take on the talking points. His point was about discrimination, was that what we were talking about forced discrimination, and that discrimination was wrong, you know, that sort of line. So it's going down that, and which was funny because that was one of Bob's very last sort of articles towards the end there. He was building that concept, you know, on that thing about discrimination and how non-discrimination doesn't work.
We're engaging in discrimination, but you engage in discrimination, you want to discriminate between people who follow political correctness and those who don't, and ban everybody that doesn't follow political correctness. So it's just a matter, we don't have some monopoly on discrimination.
Yeah, I mean, that's what this whole article is about. Should we discriminate against pro-whites or not?
Right.
And they're going to say yes. And I remember Bob brought up a point before, is that borders discriminate. I mean, everything you do in your life, even when you talk and you speak, you're discriminating. You're using one word other than other words because you're trying to express yourself. You discriminate in everything you do. There is nothing wrong with discrimination.
Yeah. When you decide what kind of ice cream you want to buy,
exactly. Large
curd or small curd?
anytime there is a choice in your life, you discriminate against something.
Right.
Anytime. Yeah. So
this was what Dirk tweeted. He said, "Because you have to discriminate against everyone else to maintain your racial utopia, that's why."
This was in response to what? What was that specifically responding to?
So he had said about we're not anti-white. Now there's another great thing that he was on the defensive. Right. He says we're not anti-white. We are against white supremacy.
Then I said separation is not supremacy.
Right.
And he said, well, but it's discriminatory. I said, well, it's not supremacy. Whatever it is, it's not supremacy.
That's right. We made the statements about how can't be white supremacist if you want nothing to do with non-whites. How can you be white supremacist if there's nobody around but white people? from a white survivor's viewpoint, we ask for our only place to survive. And then that's when he said, because you have to discriminate against everyone else to maintain your racial utopia. That's why. And then this is Bob Whitaker. So this is Bob, and I grabbed this from one of his articles. He goes, non-discrimination doesn't work. You let in non-whites, and they demand that you let in the scum. Every country that adopts non-discrimination becomes a people in. Then you make it a principle that anyone has a right to be here, and cheers, country turns into a sewer. A country that must keep its people in by force is a failure. That's the way it works in the real world. Non-discrimination does not work. No matter how you theorize, non-discrimination becomes a rule and immigration becomes an open sewer.
You don't discriminate between better and worse, you're going to end up with worse, yeah.
End up with a lot worse, that's it. And this is another... That's kind of what
that law in Canada is now, or the act that they're doing in Canada without enforcing certain laws. They're not discriminating now against law.
Yeah,
I guess.
Against criminals, yeah. Versus law-abiding people. They're all the same. You know, that's what when you don't allow police profiling. Yeah, you're not discriminating. So the police now have to treat everybody like a criminal equally.
So I mean, really, we have to start getting them on the defensive to tell us why discrimination is wrong.
Yeah.
I mean, we need a talking point. To develop some kind of talking point about this, like where they need to go on the defensive about this and prove to us and prove to everyone that discrimination is somehow wrong when everybody discriminates in their life. I mean, like we said,
they discriminate between people who follow political correctness and heretics like us.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, the very first point is it doesn't justify white genocide. You can't just say that, oh, because we have to discriminate for what we are claiming as a racial utopia. You're just justifying it. He's just making up an excuse as to why we must accept it.
And it's a really dumb excuse.
And he wants to discriminate against us to create his multiracial utopia.
Exactly. Yeah.
So it's just that, again, we don't have any monopoly on discrimination or hate or intolerance or anything.
This was another quick little quote that was from another article of Bob's that says, the whole white genocide movement is based on the assumption that if there is any white community anywhere, all whites will go there. Integration must be forced because always no country can be white.
They can't be reasonable. They can't compromise. They can't allow whites to have anything anywhere because their whole thing will collapse. But... Exactly. You know, our discrimination stops genocide. Dirk's discrimination imposes genocide. That's right. The difference.
Exactly. Yep. And he's the genocide scholar.
Yeah. Beto, Trump's immigration policies, greatest cruelty and inhumanity in this country's history. Because Trump wants to discriminate between the people that create the conditions in Mexico and Americans. Mm. Beto says that everybody should live in those cruel and inhumane conditions because he wants unlimited numbers of Mexicans to come up here and create Mexico here. So we have to live in Mexico, which he just said is cruel and inhuman. So he wants to, Trump wants to keep the cruelty and humanity down in Mexico. Beto wants it in all across North America.
Well, isn't that kind of the phrase of what socialism or communism is? Is the equal sharing of misery?
True.
Beto wants us all to live in Mexico, cruel and inhumane Mexico. Yeah. Beto, by saying this, is assuming again white superiority.
Yeah, that was where I was going to. Yeah, talk about white supremacy, white superiority. You know, you don't get much more than that.
Living in a brown country is cruel and inhuman.
Yeah.
But living in a white country is not.
White's rule.
And I think black people might have a problem with this statement. You know, if we're playing oppression Olympics, you know, he's saying that these immigration policies are the greatest and most inhuman in the history of the country. You got slavery. He's saying it's worse than slavery.
And the Holocaust?
Yeah.
Wow.
So,
Not letting in unlimited number of Jews from Europe. I thought that was the greatest cruelty in humanity of all time. Yeah.
Well, tomorrow there'll be a new greatest and cruel.
Anytime whites don't put themselves far enough down on their list of concerns, their own race far enough down on their list of concerns, that's cruelty and inhumanity. Yeah.
Yeah. It's the worst thing ever.
When they don't care about other races more than themselves, it's cruelty and inhumanity. Yeah. It's not like we created conditions down there or in Guatemala or in El Salvador or anywhere. And anyone that says that is a liar. It is engaging in slander against white people. The people create the country, not the dirt, not the laws, the people. And it's just kind of ridiculous that Trump can't, you know, DACA was illegal to begin with. Totally illegal. It's just ridiculous that Trump can't undo it with a stroke of a pen.
That's the same in across the board, though, with Trump. You know, with a stroke of a pen, that man could do so much. Bob said he was a fake president. You know, he's just... He did what he needed to. He saw the, you know, the momentum and stepped out in front. And he saw that he could get the white vote if he talked about immigration. And boy, did it work.
Yeah, he dog whistled to what used to be called the Wallace voters and then the Reagan Democrats. And in desperation, they voted for him. And yeah, no. More or less abandoning them. I guess maybe he's not quite as bad as Hillary would have been, but.
Right. Yeah,
Hillary might have turned more white people, though. Might have made it more obvious for white people that
that's the flip side of the coin, is that maybe white people need a wake up call. You know? Like you pointed out initially when we talked to that the professor who works with Newsweek, is that you said Trump might tap the brakes on white genocide while Hillary would go full throttle.
Christina Clift, yeah.
Yeah, Christina Cliff from Newsweek and other outlets. Boston Herald too. Yeah. This Beto quote is just hilarious. It just reminded me of our podcast. And hopefully people will listen to our podcast, especially that last one, and start seeing this stuff everywhere. You'll come up with your own observations, the stuff that we've never even thought of. About how they bring about and wear their white supremacist worldview on their sleeves, and they never even realize it. It's a blind spot that they have, and they've never really considered it until we point it out.
Yes, hopefully you'll watch our last podcast, even though it was bizarrely flagged for exposing white supremacy and white superiority. Hopefully you'll watch it anyway. It'll explain this in a little more in depth.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think probably what happened is some of our subscribers are anti-whites and they're watching our stuff like a hawk, and they probably flag every single video that we put up.
Yeah.
But this one was they watched it and
straight away.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And they said, well, we like exposing white supremacy, but not this one. This kind of white supremacy is good. Right. We don't want people to hear about it.
I appealed it. We'll see what happens. We'll see if they support. They're for or against exposing white superiority. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
That's probably the first time, in my estimation, the first time in history they've ever banned a YouTube video for outright exposing white supremacy. That's probably the first ban it's ever had.
Yeah,
and it's legitimately, we are legitimately exposing white supremacist views.
Yeah.
Is in a way that's undeniable. We're doing it better than any anti-racist ever could, or anti-whites ever could. So.
Yes, at the cutting edge, you know, of exposing this kind of bias. John Cleese faces online backlash after claiming London isn't an English city anymore. Well, what is English, I guess, would be the question, huh? I guess he has a different concept of what English is than maybe some other people do. Maybe the mayor of London has a little bit different concept.
Well, I think the mayor of London has actually bragged about being a non-English city.
Why okay, so he knows, yeah. So he wasn't criticized for for thinking that, that being English has something to do with race. Okay. But John Cleese is.
Yeah, I mean, it's simple. You're allowed to talk about London being non-English as long as you're celebrating it.
Yeah.
If you're celebrating white genocide, well, then you're a saint and you're tolerant. If you're objecting to it, then all of a sudden it's not even happening. And you're just a tinfoil hat wearing conspiracy theorist and a neo-Nazi.
What's it?
He also doubled down on it. There was a new tweet he put out where he's kind of using some of our talking points about colonialism. Okay, there it is.
That's it?
I think so. Yeah, that's the one.
There's a view that any kind of colonialism was and is wrong. The trouble is that nearly everyone's been up to it. The Romans colonized England for 400 years, and then the Normans colonized us for another 300. I put it down to the fact that there will always be power-hungry folk. Well, our point is that Turks have colonialized, Japanese have colonialized, Incas, Aztecs, Arabs, Mongols.
Yeah.
Not like whites have some monopoly on colonialism.
His point was kind of the same as Bob's, is that all groups have done as much damage as their power would allow them to.
Yeah, except whites.
Yeah, except, I mean, there's an argument that, you know, whites are the only exception to that, really.
Yeah.
We
got the bomb. Anybody else got the A-bomb would have destroyed everybody else, you know?
Right. Yeah, I mean, at the time they had that bomb, whites could have taken over the world. So that's kind of what, I think it's kind of one of our talking points is that, you know, all groups did as much damage as their power would allow them to. Why are whites being singled out and told that we're somehow evil for that, for the fact that we colonized and conquered just like all the other groups did?
Yeah, we're just better at it. You're just jealous. Yeah, we're better at waging war, yeah. Anything else on John Cleese?
Way to go, John.
Yeah. John did a good job there.
What's going on here? Is he actually, I mean, he's noticing something, I guess, obviously. And I guess it takes some courage to say what he said.
He's following up from his first one. What was his initial one? His first one was pointing out that on the BBC there that England is no longer majoritively English. And now he was following up saying that lots of his friends had concurred with his observation. Right.
And yeah.
Some years ago, I opined that London was not really an English city anymore. Since then, virtually all my friends from abroad have confirmed my observation. Mm-hmm. So there must be some truth in it. I note that London was the UK city that voted most strongly to remain in the EU.
Mm-hmm.
He later hit back at criticism in a series of tweets writing, "I suspect I should apologize for my affection for the Englishness of my upbringing, but in some ways I found it calmer, more polite, more humorous, less tabloid, and less money-oriented than the one that is replacing it."
Oh, I didn't know that one. That's what a great quote.
Yeah,
awesome.
Okay, he also denied his comments about London being not an English city had a racial element. Oh, I'm not a racist. Don't call me racist. So, okay, well.
Yeah,
in some respect, I think that's why he was following up too. You know, he's seeing that he's getting a lot of attention, you know, for the comment that he made, and he's wanting to redo it again, you know, generate the conversation. Or he's like what you just said then, Jeff. He's like, "I'm not racist, I'm just proving my point, you know. Look, other people agree with me. This is the case, this is the truth." You know, it's,
if you would like to ask the many foreign friends who have made this observation me, I can put you in touch with them. Yes, I have all kinds of non-white friends, so I'm not racist.
Right.
Well, no. I mean, look at his, Cleese replied in one Twitter user who asked if his claims were about race. "No, why would you discredit me for criticizing things I have not said? Keep your projections to yourself." So in a way, I mean, he's kind of acknowledging, even though he says no, that it is about race. He's just pointing out that the other guy thinks that it is, because we all know it is. We all know it is about race. And even the guy who criticized him, like if it's not about race. Why are you asking? If you don't think it's about race, why are you just insinuating that it is about race? And the reason that the guy that was criticizing Khalees asked if it was about race is because he thinks it is about race.
The lady doth protest too much, methinks. Yeah,
exactly.
It is about race. It is.
That was knows. Right at the top of his thoughts, yeah.
Anybody that calls him a racist for that statement is admitting that they think it's about race. Because it is.
And then the mayor of London, Sadiq Khan, responded, Londoners know that our diversity is our greatest strength. Well, what is diversity? If there's no race, what's diversity? So right there, he's talking about race.
Yeah. Exactly. Yep.
Well, if there's no such thing as race, what's diversity?
Yeah.
So, I mean, it brings up
all this. Nobody asked him if he's talking about race.
What do you mean by diversity? what's diversity? If there's no race, what's diversity? I mean, how do you know it's diverse? Yeah. How do you know London is diverse? What makes it diverse?
And people made the big criticism to John Cleese was that John Cleese lives in the Caribbean. And they're saying, look at you. You're an immigrant in the Caribbean and you're criticizing immigration. Well, one thing is that the Caribbean's not calculated to become non-black because of immigration and forced assimilation. London and England in general is calculated to become non-English due to mass immigration and forced assimilation. So
yeah,
there's a big difference there.
Blacks have 50 countries in Africa alone, Haiti.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
It's not like every black country is being flooded with millions and millions of non-blacks.
Mm. Yeah, we're talking about a tropical island. Mm. Where he's at. I mean, he went there to retire and have live out his retirement next to the beach in a tropical island. So yeah, there's no.
Yeah, comparison. And he was escaping London. He was with his white flight, really.
Yeah. So and he does kind of have a point though about you guys are assuming that I hate non-whites. Well, I moved to the Caribbean, so clearly it's not that I have some kind of hatred, a racial hatred. It's more about that he loves, and he stated that he loves his Englishness. He loves the English people and English culture and history. And why should he be criticized for that? Why are they discriminating against English people like that?
It's not like, blacks didn't immigrate there too.
Right. Exactly. They're not, blacks are not indigenous to the Caribbean.
Right?
Is English magic dirt?
It is.
Is it something racial?
Well, the minute a pygmy crosses into England, he becomes just like Isaac Newton. The dirt is magic.
Yeah.
Who are the people that are supposed to have guilt over British colonialism?
Yes.
Is Sadiq Khan, the mayor of London, is he supposed to have any guilt over British imperialism, or however you want to phrase it?
A real Briton is the ones you blame for colonialism. There you go.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
see how easy it is?
Yeah. And all the Turks in Germany, none of them are expected to have any guilt over the Holocaust.
Yep.
Only Germans, only real Germans are supposed to have guilt.
And who's a real American? Well, the gene pool you say stole America. Yeah. Didn't. Mm-hmm. Well, blacks are Americans. Well, did they steal America?
Yeah. Are they supposed to have guilt over American atrocities, quote unquote?
Were Chinese involved in the Indian Wars and mm-hmm. Wounded Knee and that kind of thing?
Right.
Do you blame the Chinese and blacks for Wounded Knee? Yeah.
Exactly.
Or is it just Americans?
Yeah, they only blame Americans. Yeah. Actual what? Americans.
Yeah.
Three white female executives launch blockbuster $90 million suit against New York Education Department, claiming they were demoted under its controversial racial equity plan.
It's not just about the evil white male. They're if you're white, doesn't matter your gender. It's about diversity is always about less white people, getting less white people in in a whatever system they're talking about, whether it's society or employment, diversity, no matter how it's the word is being thrown out there, is always used meaning less white people.
Yeah, first they get rid of the white males, but then the white females. It's not like, you know, it's not like if white females are going to be exempt from this diversity. They try to pit us against each other, but you know, they try to say, well, we're gonna get rid of white males and we're gonna give your jobs to white females. Okay. Yeah, for a while. That might work. For a while you might benefit from that, but eventually you're on the chopping block too.
Yeah.
Like we said, the people that feed the crocodile, the most just get eaten last.
I wonder what Dirk thinks about this kind of discrimination. Is this well, in Europe, actually, they use the term positive discrimination. Like in America, it's what we call affirmative action. Over in Europe, is called positive discrimination. And it's probably the case in Australia, too.
Well, that's a little more honest, I guess. I mean, except for the positive part. But that's sort of a judgment call. Meaning fewer whites is good, yeah. Fewer whites is positive. Less whites is something we need to strive for. Yeah, so more diverse is less white. Yeah, if they flood all the non-whites in and then say, well, it's about equality, it's about being colorblind, treating everybody equally, regardless of their color, but then it's not. Obviously, it's not. It's about displacing white people, get rid of white people, disempowering white people, disenfranchising white people, and demoralizing white people, taking away their ability to resist. If you take their money away, that's a pretty good start. Until you get them to the point where they have nothing to lose, I guess.
Yep.
But, you know, trying to use the legal system, if you're not in power, you can't count on the people in power to treat you fairly. Yeah. If you are a dissident, if you are a heretic, they'll just change the rules. Mm-hmm. Okay, so, yeah, I'm not against a lawsuit like this, but
I'm not expecting anything to come out of it.
There's no substitute for winning the propaganda war and taking power. Don't think you're gonna figure out some clever way around that. You're not. What a lawsuit like this can do, even if you lose, you prove, okay, you're not about fairness. You're just anti-white. You know, you can use the result in the propaganda war as ammunition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I tend to think it's kind of a waste of time, but who knows? I mean, you might get a judge with some integrity that will, you know, notice this for what it is, but they're still part of the anti-white system, so.
And it did get some publicity, you know, pointing out how anti-white the New York Education Department is. How they don't really give a damn about, you know, racial fair, about, you know, they're not colorblind or anything like that.
Mm.
They're not whatever they claim to be. They're just anti-white. That's basically our whole, you know, program, our whole goal is to point out that they're not pro-equality. They're not anti-racist. Mm-hmm. They're not pro-tolerance. They're not anti-hate. They're not anything they claim to be. They're just, at the end of the day, anti-white.
Yep. They're not anti-conquest or, you know, anti-genocide. It's just anti-white.
In the Daily News there, the Daily Mail, they're actually using the term anti-white. I mean, how cool is that?
Oh, did they? They use that in this?
Yeah.
Oh, there you go.
It's fantastic. And I mean, it is, you know, in the very up the heading there, it states that at the beginning there about how they're going after, these courses. And there's been several universities where they've got this, you know, the problem with whiteness and, you know, toxic whiteness. It says there at the start, crusade against toxic whiteness. You know, I think that this is exactly what our job is and pointing out how they're not anti-racist, they're just anti-white. I think you're right. You're not necessarily going to win, but lawsuits like this can certainly set precedents. Yeah.
The suit says Richard Carranza, pictured with Mayor Bill de Blasio, instituted an anti-white regime, which when he became chancellor of public schools in March of 2018. Anti-white. So our terms are getting out there. This is what we want. We want people to be using our terms.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a term like anti-white regime.
Well, and go up, scroll up. Okay. Scroll up. In the very first there, at the first heading, it says,
yeah,
anti-white regime, instituted an anti-white regime. I mean,
Just getting that term out there, we're imposing terminology. We're getting that in people's brains. Anti-white, anti-white, yes. Anti-white.
Thinking anti-white. About, you know, that terms, it's not okay to be anti-white.
Yeah.
And like you were saying, Jeff, that even if this lawsuit doesn't come to be, that they don't, that they're not rewarded what they're entitled to, at least this is being put out there. It's in the media. And, you know, this is just making more people aware of what diversity policies really mean at the end of the day. It's just less white people.
And if we hadn't have been out there pushing out our terminology, would they have even, you know, said exactly. Something like this?
Yeah. And if we had more people out there pushing this, our points, would they not be using these terms more often?
We
need to be hammering these terms and these talking points out there. And we need people out there listening to do that. We need you to go out there. Use even just the one phrase, anti-white, that one term is damaging to this system. If you're just calling people anti-white and pointing out these discrepancies that they have and their contradictions, are going to have an effect on society.
And just making people aware that there is such a thing as being anti-white or anti-whiteism. Before you put that term out there, nobody thought that way. Mm-hmm. You put these terms out there and you change mass consciousness, mm-hmm. which is what we're about, changing public opinion, however you want to put it.
There is no quick fix. This is we're taking on the culture war by doing this.
Yeah, we're
trying to. It takes time. So you may not see any immediate effect, even though the term anti-white, if said to somebody at the right time, it's going to stop them dead in their tracks. And they're immediately going to go on the defensive. I'm not anti-white. What do you mean I'm anti-white? What do you mean?
Yeah.
I'm white. How can I be anti-white? You're immediately putting them on the defense.
Yeah, we're undoing decades of anti-white programming. We have, so that's going to take, you know, it's going to take repetition to do that. We have, you know, conservatives saying, I'm not a racist. We want people to be saying, I'm not anti-white. Oh, please don't call me anti-white. I'm not anti-white. That's the situation we want.
Yep.
Toxic white. Oh, longtime officials said they were unfairly targeted as part of the department's crusade against toxic whiteness. Did the Nazis ever talk about toxic Jewishness? Were they ever that blatant about their hatred of Jews as these people are about their hatred of white people?
Yeah, that phrase right there.
Isn't that inciting hatred against white people?
One would think.
Yeah. If people mention toxic whiteness enough, might that make somebody want to punch a white person or something? Are you inciting violence? Isn't that hate speech? If that isn't hate speech, what is?
Yeah, exactly. Hey.
Well, and another thing that the author does here is they put toxic whiteness in quotations. That kind of stuff by itself is also very effective, I think. It takes that term into question.
Okay.
It is, yeah. I think so many people are being affected by this in their daily lives that that is why what we do is so important in getting talking points out there so that people can label it, you know, that they see that they are being attacked because they are white, you know, that they are losing their jobs and being replaced, affirmative action, that it is just because you're white that we are being attacked. And our history, I mean, they're not any racist, they're not any hate, they're not any anything except anti-white.
And to a real extent, something doesn't exist in your mind until it's been named.
Right. Yep.
So once it's named, now you got something to hang it on, you know.
That's
now it has a a position in your thinking, in your consciousness.
Yeah,
I think that's kind of what set me on to like the whole mantra movement, is that I always knew that there was something going on and I couldn't put my finger on it.
Mm-hmm.
And then the concept of white genocide was introduced to me, and it finally had a name. It had a name to it, and I was able to piece that puzzle together.
Right. Yep. Connect the dots.
Yep.
Yeah, it's good. That's it. That's what we want. So
we're in a word war. This is what we mean by word war. We don't mean ideas expressed in words. We mean they chuck a racist at you, you lob an anti-white at them. That's what we mean by word war. Not 3,000 word essays. You know.
Yep. That's it. Simple. Keeping it simple. Pointing it out, repeating it over and over, and it's that mindset of it's not okay. It's not okay to be anti-white. You're not anti-Mexican or anti-black or anti-Japanese. You know, you're not forcing any other community except white communities to become more diverse, aka more non-white. This is only happening to white people. White people are being chased down with diversity, and only white people are being targeted with these courses. You know, the problem with whiteness talk, I mean, that, like you just said, Jeff, you don't get more inciting violence and hatefulness than
toxic whiteness.
Toxic whiteness, you know, that's like, yeah.
Yeah, and a lot of pro-whites, they seem to be in this false dichotomy that it's either shooting war or it's rational discussion. But a word war isn't either one of those. It's a word war. It's something different, you know. And we try to explain this to them, and it's like you're talking Mandarin. It just doesn't register. But you know, you're gonna have to figure it out, people.
Yeah.
It's a word war. It's not a shooting war. It's not a discussion. It is a word war. It's a propaganda war. We're rewiring people's brains. Really, they've anti-whites have wired people's brains to be anti-white. We gotta undo that. We gotta rewire their brains.
We are the ones that are de-radicalizing.
That's it, yeah.
Yes.
Breaking the demoralization.
It's a mass intervention, yeah. It's a mass...
Mass intervention.
Like when their people are scared straight, you know, when they're indoctrinated into a cult.
Yeah.
They got to put them in a room and, you know, and... It's a mass de-radicalization, yes.
Yeah, it's a challenge, but we are in a word war, and staying on points and repeating simple talking points is what is effective. And that's how exactly we have gotten our terminology in the Daily Mail.
Yep.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's
how many
using the term racist less and less now because of the de-radicalization that we've been taking part in. We are making the move to other terms now.
If you like this kind of content and want it to continue, please consider making a donation by going to fightwhitegenocide.com and hitting the donate button.
Okay, that'll wrap it up. Thanks for listening, and make sure you check back for our next podcast. Bye.
See you guys.
Bye.